This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, Parshas Devarim, everybody, 5779. We have a pasuk, Perek Aleph, pasuk Chav Hey and pasuk Chav Vav. It says, "Vayigal biyadam mipriyaretz." They took in their hands from the fruit of the ground. Vayoridu elenu. And they brought it back to us. This is the Meraglim. Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, this is what the Meraglim did. They took the fruit of the land, they brought it down. Vayashuvu osanu davor. And they came back with a word for us. Vayomer, they said, Tov haaretz asher Hashem Elokeinu nosen lanu. Good is the land that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us. It's an awesome land. Pasuk Chavav says, V'avisam lalos, but you didn't want to go up. Batamros pi Hashem Elokeichem. And you rebelled against the mouth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, this, by definition, I think this is like revisionist history. The Meraglim were good. The Meraglim were saying that the land was good. And it's the other people, the Jews, that were like, oh no, we can't handle this. That doesn't make any sense. That can't be it. That's not the answer over here. It's clear as day in Parsha Shlach that the Meraglim convinced the people that something was wrong. That the Meraglim went up to the people and told them there were giants and there were fortified cities and there's no way we were going to be able to defeat them. How are we going to be able to do it? There's so much there. This doesn't make any sense. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu seem to say something totally different this time around? What happened exactly? So Rashi said that who said good things about the land? It wasn't the Meraglim. It was Yoshua and Kalev. When it says over here, that was the other Meraglim. Vayomeru is referring to Yoshua and Kalev. They said, Tova Aretz Asher Hashem Elokeinu Nosen Lanu. They're the ones who said over here. Moshe Rabbeinu was giving Musar to Bnei Yisrael and telling them, why would you have listened to the Meraglim? You should have listened to Yoshua and Kalev. Yoshua and Kalev came back with a good report about the land. Yoshua and Kalev said, you can certainly defeat the land. God is going to be on our side. That's what Yoshua and Kalev were saying. The other Meraglim were saying horrible things, right? Why would you listen to them? You should have listened to Yoshua and Kalev. Targum Yonasan says the exact same thing. Pasuk Chav Hey, he only mentions Kalev and Yoshua. He says, they're the ones that say that the land is good. And the next Pasuk, the Pasuk says, V'lo avisam lalos, you didn't want to go up, you rebelled against the mouth of Hashem. He says, and the other Meraglim, they're the ones who rebelled against Hashem. They're the ones who refused to listen to the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the line that Rashi and Targum Yonasan learn over here. The Ramban asks the question. He says, I don't understand. If you were Bnei Yisrael at the time, you would have listened to Yoshua and Kalev? Would you not have gone with the 10 Meraglim? The 10 Meraglim were great people. They were all Nisim. They were leaders of Klal Yisrael. They were unbelievable men. And there were 2 people against 10. When you have 10 people against 2, wouldn't you go with the majority? Wouldn't you say, Acharei Rabim Lahatos? So how can you blame Klal Yisrael for listening to the other Meraglim over Yoshua and Kalev? That makes no sense. What would be the problem over here? So I saw 5 answers to this question, 5 different answers to why they should have listened to Yoshua and Kalev. The Ramban himself answers, yes, you should have listened to those 2 over the 10. Why? Because God was involved. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm going to conquer the land for you. I'm going to take care of all this. So even though you have 10 versus 2, 10 people saying we can't do it, 2 people saying you can, you have 2 and Hashem versus 10. 2 and Hashem should have defeated the other 10. That's what should have happened over here. Says the Ramban, that was the problem. You're afraid. You think something's wrong. That shouldn't be that. That was your fault for not listening. That's the first thing. That's the Ramban. The Gur Aryeh, this is the Maral, says, of course you should have listened to Yeshua and Kalev over the other 10. We have a rule. The rule is, Milsa de Avida Ligluyi lo Meshakri Ba'inshi. If it's something that people are going to know about, people are going to find out about in the end, people aren't going to lie about it. You're not going to lie about something you could be caught on. Would you lie about something that you know 5 minutes from now you're going to be caught on? So let's think. The Meraglim, says the Gur Aryeh, were trying to convince them to stay away from the land. If they stayed away from the land, they listened to the Meraglim, would they ever be caught in their lie? No, because nobody will ever go in. So the Meraglim were not lying about something that's avida l'gluya. They were lying about something that they hoped nobody would ever find out about. What about Yoshua and Kalev? Yoshua and Kalev would say, let's go in. There's not going to be any problems if we go in. That's a milsa avida l'gluya. That's something that you're going to see in 5 minutes from now, whether they're lying or not. You're going to see just by walking in. Oh, they were wrong. They were dead wrong. They're lying to us. They would find out in a second. People would not lie about things that are avida l'gluya. Therefore, they should have listened to Yoshua and Kalev. because they were saying about something that was avida leguliya. They shouldn't have listened to the Meraglim. That was something that anybody could have said anything about. We have no idea what they really meant by that. That's the Gurari. The Maral Diskin says the same thing. That's an unreal answer, but that's a great answer to this question. Rav Chaim in Taimed Akra, Rav Chaim Knievsky in Taimed Akra, this is a very similar idea. The Meraglim were no Gea Bedover. We know the Meraglim were no Gea Bedover. They knew that when they entered Eretz Yisrael, they would no longer be leaders. They didn't have a job if they entered Eretz Yisrael. Since there were no Gea Bedover, there were no Gea in what they were saying, you can't believe them. When they said the land is bad, let's stay out, that benefits for them. That's a benefit to them. That's something that they would want. You cannot listen to them, says Rav Chaim. But Yoshua and Kalev were taking themselves down. Let's go to Eretz Yisrael. Who cares that I'm going to lose my position? We're willing to lose our position to go to the land. Why would they say that if they weren't telling the truth? Rav Chaim says that's the idea behind it. Something like that. Of course you should have listened to Yoshua and Kalev. The Meraglim were no Gea Bedover. Yoshua and Kalev were not. They were saying something that works. The other Meraglim were not. Should have been obvious you go with Yoshua and Kalev. The Chidah says you had a Chazaka backing up. And this is similar to the Ramban. But the Chazaka backing them up was something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them the land was great. Not that Hashem was with them, that was the Ramban's pshat, but Hashem already told them the land was great. That means they had a chazakah that the land was awesome, a chazakah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had already told them go to the land, and Yoshua and Kalev backed up that chazakah. The other Meraglim did not have a chazakah. The other Meraglim were going against a chazakah, the assumption that they had up until now. So you got to go with the chazakah and Yoshua and Kalev over the other Meraglim. Yeah,
did Yoshua and Kalev basically call out the other parties?
Call them out? Yes.
Did they give the reporting independently, or were they saying, they're like, you guys are liars?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right after they turned to the Tova Oretz Ma'od Ma'od, they said, no, well, we... Let's go up. We're going to inherit it. We're going to drive them out. There's no issues, said Yoshua and Kalev. 100%. They went up against the Meraglim in their faces. Said, of course we're going to win. What's the problem over here? It was so obvious to them that it was silly to go anywhere else. It was silly to say anything else. That's the idea that Chidah says. And finally, we have Rav Moshe. Our fifth answer is Rav Moshe and Dorash Moshe. Rav Moshe finds and says, once they heard from any of the Meraglim that this was a great land, once they heard it at all, that should have been enough to convince them with everything they needed to know. Who cares if the nations within are strong? It doesn't make a difference how super strong they are. HaKadosh Baruch Hu just disposed of the mightiest nation, the Egyptians, 39 years ago. They had no issue when they went to Mitzrayim. That was not an issue whatsoever. Mitzrayim was done in a miraculous fashion. All they needed to do from the Meraglim, they did not need to hear whether they were a strong nation or not. They needed to hear that the land was good. Was the land good? Yes, everyone said the land was good. So if that's true, go in and don't worry about it whatsoever. Of course, you got to listen to Yoshua and Kalev. Yoshua and Kalev were saying, the land is good. We answered your question. Let's go. HaKadosh Baruch will take care of the rest. That, according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, they got messed up in what the whole question was. They thought the question was, should we go, shouldn't we go? The Meraglim weren't answering that. They were answering how to go in. What's awesome about the land? Get them excited to go into the land. That didn't happen yet. So the Ramban says there's another aspect here that's got to be pointed out. The truth is that we've said up until now, the way that Rashi and the way that Targum Yonason said it, it's only Yoshua and Kalev that said that the land was good. But not true, says the Ramban. Everyone admitted the land was good at some point. Everyone said that there is no question, it was undeniable that this land was awesome. And every single one of the Meraglim agreed to that. The fruits were right there. They brought back the grapes, a fig, a pomegranate. They saw these huge fruits. That was something that everyone could attest to. Is the land awesome, says the Ramban? Everybody agreed with that. We're saying over here, Vayomru, they said, Tova Oretz Asher Hashem Elokeinu Nosein Lanu, good is the land that that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us. True. Every one of the Meraglim said that. The Meraglim then said, but there are giants. But it's going to be hard to conquer. But everyone agreed that this is 100% true. Yoshua and Kali just said, we have to prepare for war, we're going to be okay. But there's another aspect to it. The Ramban says, when somebody goes up to you and says in public something, and then in private tells you something else, tells you something bad, it's clear he's trying to hide something. When Moshe Rabbeinu was around and all the people were together, the Meraglim and Yoshua and Kalev all got up and they said, yeah, it's awesome land. Yeah, it's not a problem. Everything's all good. That night, when Bnei Yisrael was going to sleep, the Meraglim made their rounds. Without Moshe Rabbeinu around, without Yoshua, without Kalev, the 10 Meraglim went around from house to house and they were like, oh my gosh, there were crazy giants there. It's really scary. The people are unbelievably strong. They didn't see that in front of Moshe Rabbeinu because they knew as soon as they said it, Moshe Rabbeinu would shush them. and say that we're not worried about that. We have God on our side. But they did it without Moshe Rabbeinu there. So the way the Ramban says, the Ramban looks at this and says, how in the world could you listen to these Meraglim? Meraglim said it's good land in public. They said Tova Oretz Asher Hashem Elokeinu Nosen Lanu in public in front of everybody. And then in private, they came to you at night and they told you little things. Of course you have to say to them, stop it. Stop it. And that's why in Pasuk Chavav it says, Vatei Ragnu Bo Aleichem. They argued with them in their tents. In your own tents. That's where the Meraglim said all their bad things. They said what they wanted to say in front of there so that you didn't even realize how bad it was. You didn't even realize what you were missing out on. That was the idea behind it. Rav Hirsch says it beautifully. He quotes this Ramban in such a way. He says, as far as the, I'm quoting over here, as far as the excellence of the land, they were all agreed. Indeed, they brought fruit of it, proof of it in the fruits that they brought. They had proof by showing those fruits. They had no history. Everything else was only subjective personal impression when the which the gigantic appearance of the inhabitants of the country had made on their timid souls. They were scared. That's it. But everybody agreed, Tova Oretz Asher Hashem Elokeinu Nosen Lanu. That wasn't an issue whatsoever. The Orach Chaim HaKadosh says it was an even a subtler taina on Klal Yisrael. Look at this claim. Hashem told them there would never be a war. He never told them. He said, the irrational said, we're going to be able to drive them out, not a war. Kadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm willing to take care of that. You should have listened to that. You should have realized there was no issue for that. I was going to fight for you. And if they would have realized that, then the Meraglim never would have had a taina, B'nai Yisrael never would have had an issue, and there would never have been an issue of what was going to be later on. We'd never fight against Yericho or the Ai or anything that happened in the times of Yoshua later on. They knew this. Their disbelief in what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to do to them or do for them was by far the biggest issue. That was by far the biggest issue that they had. The Sforno also says that this is talking about the Meraglim themselves, all of the Meraglim. After all, they all admitted that the land was flowing with the milk and honey. That wasn't an issue whatsoever. Rashi says back in Shlach that in order to lie, you got to say something that's true along with it. You want to get a lie in? Don't just lie. If you lie, no one's going to hear you. Add in some truth and then put in a lie as well. Add some truth to it and then people actually listen to you. When B'nai Yisrael refused to go in, the onus was on them, not on the Meraglim, because they should have realized what was going on with the other Meraglim, and that was their fault. But all of them agree. This Sforno, the Ramban's Pshat, the Orach Chaim HaKadosh and Rav Hirsch are all in agreement. This idea that happened was the Meraglim said the land was good, the Meraglim themselves, but later on they said something bad, and B'nai Yisrael listened to the wrong thing. They listened to the wrong message that was there. Okay, Yeru Shlomo says that Rashi makes a little more sense to him because there was never a point when the Meraglim said that the land was good. They said the land was flowing with milk and honey, but not that it was actually good. The Chassam Sofer in Toras Moshe says a totally different idea that makes complete sense when it comes to down this. The Girgashi nation had already been chased away. The Girgashi nation was gone. Remember we said there were seven nations in Klal Yisrael? The Kenani, the Prizi, the Amori, the Chivi, the Chiti, Yavusi, and the Girgashi. But they never fought the Girgashi. The Girgashi ran away. They said, we're out. We don't want to fight the Jews. So they ran away. That could have been with everybody. Says the Chassam Sofer, every single person could have done that. And B'nai Yisrael told the Meraglim that. They said to the Meraglim, the Meraglim were saying, they're giants there. They said, the people said, well, maybe they'll run away like the Girgashi did. We heard that the Girgashi nation ran away. Maybe the Amori is going to run away. Maybe the Canaan will run away. Maybe the Prizi, the Chivi. Maybe they're all going to run away. You know what the Meraglim answered to that? The Meraglim answered, you don't understand how good this land is. They said the land is good, but they didn't mean it in a good way. They meant it as, these people are willing to give up their lives for this land. The land is so awesome, so great. Look at these fruits. You wouldn't give up your life for these grapes? You wouldn't give up your life for a fig this size? Of course you would. That's what the people are doing. So when they said, Tova Aretz, the land is good, they meant it in response to B'nai Yisrael. B'nai Yisrael went up to the Meraglim and said, who cares if they're strong, if they're giants? That doesn't make a difference whatsoever. They could be the biggest giants in the world. They will run away. That's what they were telling them. They're going to run away and we don't have anything to worry about. Said the Meraglim, no they won't. Look at this land. They're not going to be willing to run away. It's like saying, like a person's going to fight for their money. A person's not going to sit there and let you take away his money. He's going to stand there and he's going to punch you in the face until you go away. So you can't just walk in and take the land and expect them to run away. That's never going to happen. Said the Meraglim, Tov Haaretz, if you saw this land, you would know they're not walking away from this. They're not walking away. But what about the Girgashi? They didn't own good land. the other people do, and those people are going to fight to the death for it, and that's the worst. They're going to be desperate to be able to have that. That's the idea behind it. And the truth is, says the Chasam Sofer, that's not the first time that this suggestion was made, this type of strategy. When Rav Shakeh, who is the spokesperson for Sanherib's army, came to Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Chizkiyahu HaMelech was still the king of Yerushalayim. Sanherib had already exiled the 10 tribes. The other 10 tribes, the ones up above, the ones north, were all exiled. All that was left was the area of Yehuda, Binyamin, Shevet Levi was with them, some of Shevet Shimon. But that's it. That's all the people that were left. Rav Shakeh came to the city, and in order to convince them to lay down their arms, and at the time Chizkiyahu was sick as a dog, he's lying in bed, dying. And Sanherib sends Rav Shakeh to go up to the city. And Rav Shakeh goes up, walks up to the wall, and he says to them, I promise you, we're going to exile you to a land that's equal to your land right now. And the reason why he did that was simple. Because if people think they're going to lose their land and their homes, and they're not going to go somewhere, they're going to go to a DP camp, they're going to fight to the death. They're not going to allow you to take them just like that. They're going to fight. So said Rav Shakeh, right? Let's convince them that we're going to send them to somewhere else. The Gemara says that the Jews answered back and they responded. They said, there's no way you can find a land as good as Yerushalayim. That's what they said. But Rav Shakeh did it. He went up to them and he said, I understand this is awesome land. We'll get you a land that's just as good as yours. And if you do that, then the people will say to themselves, you know what? Okay, it's hard, but I'd rather not fight. I'd rather leave and get a land as good as my own. Said the Meraglim, they're not going to do it. These people are not going to find a land as awesome as this. Therefore, they are going to fight. It's going to be out of desperation. It's going to be horrible fighting. You're never going to get there. You're never going to be able to do anything over there. That was the idea that he mentioned over there. Miam Loez says that another time, and it's good as well. You are not allowed to force your wife to move to another city that's not like the city that she's in. For example, it doesn't make a difference whether the land that you're moving to is a better land or a worse land. You cannot, think about like New York girls moving to Chicago, you know? You can't convince your wife. She has to, you can convince her. You can't force her to do it. If you say, no, don't worry, it's going to be okay, and she decides, yeah, okay, I'll do it, then that's okay. But you cannot force a person to move from one place to the other, whether it's better or worse. Even if it's better, she can claim, I'm used to this place now. I'm used to this place. You know, I have a fish tank in my house. And one time, I took all my fish. I hadn't changed the water in about a year. So I decided I was going to change the water. So I changed all the water. I put it down all the way down to kept the fish inside. That's what you're supposed to do. I filled it up with new water. It's a 75-gallon tank, right? I put it in there. The next day, 75% of the fish were dead. 3 out of every 4 fish were dead. So I went to the fish store. I said, what happened? And the person said to me, he said, you have to understand, these fish, what happens to them when they get all that new water inside there, they get shocked by their whole system gets shocked. They can't take it. So once they go into this brand new water, they feel this water, right? They're done. They can't handle it anymore. Their stress level reaches the top and they all die. I said, I understand, it's better water. The water they had inside there was like the worst water ever. It's water they've been swimming in for the past year, right? This is brand new water. And he said, right, but if they're used to that water, then it doesn't matter how bad it is. They're used to it. So if you put in brand new water, it shocks them, even if it's better. You can't convince the system that it's better for them. They don't get that. So because of that, all the fish died. Not all, 3 out of every 4. But that's the concept over here. This is what Klal Yisrael said to the Meraglim said to Klal Yisrael when they were talking about the people of this land itself. They said, Tova Aretz, it's a really good land, a little too good. I don't think you get it. You're going to go from this Midbar, where you have nothing, into the land of Eretz Yisrael, where you're going to have all these fruits. You're not going to get used to it, and you're going to die. Your systems won't be able to handle it. But it's better land. Of course it's better land. That can also kill you if you don't know how to use it properly. That's the taina that they were giving to them. And that's what convinced the people, we can't go there. It's too good. That was the line. And that's why I said, Tova Aretz Asher Nasha Hashem Elokeinu Nosen Lanu. That was the idea behind it. The Mali Omer says, the fact that they were able to bring fruit out should have been convincing enough. Think about this for a second. They walk outside carrying this massive, massive thing of grapes. huge thing of grapes. Just look at the end of Gemara Sota. At the very end, there's a picture of them carrying over those grapes, right? You have a fig, a pomegranate that's so huge. They left and they were carrying all these things. Clearly, they were Jews. The people of Canaan knew that the Jews were coming. As we just said, the Girgashi left the land knowing the Jews were coming. How did they get out? How did these spies not get killed? Why didn't anyone there stop them from leaving and say, guys, we're never going to let them out. Don't let them go. Don't let them leave. Why wouldn't anybody have said anything? Right there was the miracle. Says the Mali Omer, the Meraglim and Bnei Yisrael at that moment should have realized, we took the fruits out. We were able to take fruit out. And nobody had any issue with it. The fact that we were able to do that convinces us that we're going to make it. That everything's going to be okay. That's what they should have said. So even though the Meraglim were saying they're giants, they're huge, they got problems, everyone should have realized, listen to Yoshua and Kalev, because it makes sense that we're going to win. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed us to leave with the fruits, then obviously HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to allow us to leave with everything we need. That's the idea behind it. That's what the Malei Aroim says, is what their issue was over there. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh says Moshe Rabbeinu was telling us what all of the Meraglim said, but not like the Rishonim above. He splits up the pasuk. He says there's two statements here. It's Vayichu Biyadam. They took in their hands Mipriyar. It's Vayuridu Elenu. And they brought it to us. Vayashibunu Sanu Tavor. And they came back and they told us the worst things in the world. That was the other 10 Meraglim. And then Vayomru and the other two, Yoshua and Kalev, said Tovar is Asher Hashem Elokeinu Nosein Lanu. One was negative and one was positive. But Moshe Rabbeinu was giving them Musar and how they chose the negative over the positive. Obviously, we all look at that cup and we say, is this half empty or half full? And some people will tell you that cup is half empty. Other people will tell you that cup is half full. Other people just say half full because they want you to think that they're optimists, even though they're really pessimists in the firm. You know, they just want you to convince you that that's what they really, really are. Moshe had no reason or desire to convince Bnei Yisrael that really everything was good in Eretz Yisrael. And really what the Meraglim said was horrible and they convinced you. This is Musar. This is Musar. Moshe Rabbeinu was telling Bnei Yisrael what they did wrong. What lesson is going to be gleaned if he goes to them and said, well, the Meraglim were horrible and you guys were just convinced by them. There's no lesson in that. The point was he looked at them and he said, even though the Meraglim were involved, even though the Meraglim did something, it's your fault for not listening to the truth. It's your fault for not asking me the question. You should have come back to me and said, Moshe Rabbeinu, tell us what to do. Moshe Rabbeinu, ask the Urim Bitumim. Moshe Rabbeinu, discuss with God what we're supposed to do in this case. How could you have not have discussed it with anybody else? That's the problem over here. When they came back with a Davor, you didn't discuss it with me. You didn't go over with anything. That was the problem over there. And he says, the word Davor could be used as a Gzeira Shava. Listen to Orach Haim HaKadosh. He said, what does Davor mean? Vayashivu Osanu Davor? The word Davor appears in Parshas Shlach by the Meraglim. The word Davor appears over here. What did they say? Whatever they said over there, that applies over here. Now, question. How does a Gzera Shava work? You guys have all learned before. How does a Gzera Shava work? You allowed to make up your own Gzera Shava? Can you make a Gzera Shava? No, you can't make a Gzera Shava. You're not allowed to make it. How could the Or HaChaim HaKadosh make up a Gzera Shava? And says, it says the word Dover here, it says the word Dover over there, right? So therefore, we'll compare the two and we'll make a Gzera Shava. You can't do that. But the Or HaChaim HaKadosh is very clear. This is a Gzera Shava, and that's what was going out of here. That's what the Meraglim were saying. How could you do such a thing? So the Or HaChaim HaKadosh says the following, and it's an amazing idea. It says, you're never allowed to make a Gzera Shava on your own in order to figure out a halacha. That has to be a mesorah that you got from your Rebbe, from your Rebbe's Rebbe, Rebbe's Rebbe, all the way back to Har Sinai. A Gzera Shava works through a mesorah. But there's a difference. You could make up a Gzera Shava to understand pshat. You want to understand pshat in a pasuk? You understand what's happening or what's going on here? Then you can use a Gzera Shava. Take this word over here, find another word somewhere else, and compare the two, put them together, and make up your own Gzera Shava. Not to learn a halacha, that's usher. But you could do that in order to make something happen. You're allowed to do that whenever you want. The Pardes Yosef says, that type of Gzera Shava is called a Gilui Milsa Ba'alma. Revealing something. It's originally brought in Yerushalmi Psachim, Perek Vav Halacha Aleph. It says if you make a gzeira shavah to be mekayim talmudo, that's great. You know what mekayim talmudo means? It means thinking of different things in Gemara and trying to remember exactly where you are. For example, if I wanted to remember the Lag BaOmer sugya, the sugya that deals with Roshim Bar Yochai, right, going into the cave and coming out after all those years, it's really easy. It's Lamed Gimel Amud Beis in Shabbos. Lamed Gimel Beis could stand for Lag BaOmer. If you do that, you're going to remember where certain things are. If you want to think of, how do I know if I'm allowed to bathe on Shabbos in cold or hot water? Where does it talk about that? You can think of Daf Mem in Shabbos that deals with mikvah. Mikvah would be the word for it. And it goes into whether or not you can go into a besa, to a mesusa, a different type of bathhouse. Are you allowed to do that or not? Daf Dalid in Brachos speaks about David HaMelech at length. That's a really easy way to be able to remember the daf that David HaMelech is mentioned on. You can do that by any Gemara. You make it up on your own, and you figure some type of, I don't know, some type of memory skill, something that you can remember. I'm sorry? A mnemonic, thank you, right? In which you remember and you say to yourself, that's there. This is exactly what I need in order to remember what exactly we're supposed to do. Says the Pardes Yosef, that's what this type of, I guess it's called Gzeira Shavah, is referring to. There are two types of Gzeira Shavah, says the Margolius Yam. This is Reb Reuven Margolius. He says one type of Gzeira Shavah is exactly that. You got to get it from your Rebbe, you have to get it from his Rebbe. It's got to be brought all the way down. But there's another type, and it works as just whatever you want it to be. You want to make something up? You can, just in order to remember something. Because otherwise, there are way too many times in Tanakh that words are similar to one another. You can't just make up anything. But if you want to do it for yourself, you can do whatever you want for yourself. And that's not a problem at all. Was there a change in the Mesorah? Was there something that changed? No. It's something that I'm using on my own. Now, that explains a ton. You've probably seen a Gemara where one Rebbe had a Gzeira Shavah, and the other people did not. Rabbi Akiva had a certain Gzeira Shavah, and the Rabbanan did not. So let me ask you, why didn't the Rabbanan take that Gzeira Shavah from Rabbi Akiva? After all, if Rabbi Akiva got that Gzeira Shavah from his Rebbe, and his Rebbe from his Rebbe all the way back, why wouldn't the Rabbanan just accept that Mesorah from Rabbi Akiva? Why wouldn't that work? I understand, I never got it from my Rebbe. Fine, but Rabbi Akiva is a great rabbi. He didn't make this up on his own, so why not take it from him? And the answer is, whenever you see an argument about Gzeira Shavahs, the question is not whether that Gzeira Shavah is a real Gzeira Shavah or not. It's a question whether it's a Gzeira Shavah that's through a Mesorah or a Gzeira Shavah that was a Gilui Milsa Ba'alma. When Rabbi Kiva called it a Gzeira Shavah and said he got it from his Rebbe, they said, fine, but did your Rebbe mean it as a real Gzeira Shavah? Or did he mean it as a Gzeira Shavah that he made up in order to help remember something? In Shabbos Daf Tzadi Zayin, that's exactly what Tosfos says. That a Gilui Milsa Ba'alma type of Gzeira Shavah cannot be taught from one place to the other. It's up to each person. You can use it as a mnemonic device, but you can't teach it over to somebody else. Yeah.
But didn't you just say before that it's based on whether or not you're passing halacha from it or not?
Right.
So wouldn't that determine whether...
That type of Gzeira Shavah that Rabbi Kiva was learning from was based on halacha. He was trying to go ahead and say, see, the halacha can be learned from this idea, and he got a halacha from it. To that, the other people argued and said, you can't do that.
Well, I'm saying, so if Rabbi Akiva is paskin halacha from it, then you would know where...
The funny thing is, Rabbi Akiva had a certain psak. When they asked him for his source, he gave this Gzeira Shavah. And on that, they said, we don't have to accept that Gzeira Shavah, because we don't know if that's a Gzeira Shavah that went straight back from Moshe. He said, but it's a Gzeira Shavah. Yeah, but there's a Gzeira Shavah that could be made as a mnemonic. No, it's not that Rabbi Kiva didn't know that. It's that Rabbi Kiva wasn't sure whether his Rebbe got it as a pure Gzeira Shavah all the way back, or whether it was a mnemonic device to remember the halacha based on something else. But again, to remember the halacha, not necessarily the real source of it. So he used it as a source, and when they asked him, but what kind of a Gzeira Shavah is that? He said, honest truth, I don't know. And that's why they didn't accept it, and they never kept it as a regular device or something that's going to be there. And it's all over the place, this idea. So whenever you see Gzeira Shavah in the Gemara itself, look at it. See, is that a real one or is there not one? There is a tremendous sefer written by the Maratz Chiyas, Mubsir Chiyas, who, it's funny, because the Rambam has a list of Gzeira Shavahs. He mentions maybe like 18, 20, but he just gives examples. The Maratz Chiyas wrote an entire sefer all of the Gzeira Shavas that are mentioned throughout Shas. But some of them may not be actual Gzeira Shavas. They might be these Gzeira Shavas that are Gili Milsas that are a little bit different. Therefore, there's not much you can do with that. There's not much if you can say if that's a real one or a fake one. We don't know. We have absolutely no idea. Okay, the last part over here is Rashi points out the word Bayoridu. They went down to bring the rest of Bnei Yisrael these fruits. It says, Vayoridu, what is the wording? Vayoridu Eleinu, they brought them down to us. So, simply put, what does it mean, Vayoridu Eleinu? The easiest answer, Sidney Ibn Ezra, they climbed up trees, cut the fruits down, and brought it down with them. Is that an easy answer? Vayoridu Eleinu, they brought it down to us. Literally, they brought it down to us. Second answer, the Ibn Ezra brings this, the Rashi brings this. They came down because Eretz Yisrael is gavoa mikol ha'aretzos. Eretz Yisrael is a very high land. The land is much higher than the land around it. And therefore, they went down to bring it to them in the Midbar. They came from a higher land to bring it down into the Midbar itself. It's funny. Eretz Yisrael is called gavoa mikol ha'aretzos. But the land that is the lowest land in the world, I think, what is it, 1,900 feet below sea level, whatever the salt sea is, the Dead Sea, that the lowest land in the world is in Eretz Yisrael as well. Gavoa mikol ha'aretzos, but you see, that's what it is. And I guess the truth is that's true by anything that's kadosh and tameh. Whenever you have a tremendous amount of kedusha, the tuma is just as strong. It's very difficult. You ever notice Ma'aris Machpelah was called, it was in Kiryat Arba. Why was it called Kiryat Arba? You remember? Kiryat Arba is called what? The four what? The four giants that live there. Giants of Tuma. What's the other reason why it's called Kiryat Arba? The four? The Avos and Adam and Chava, right, that were buried there. The Kedusha that was inside there. Kiryat Arba is literally an area that's filled with Kedusha and filled with Tuma at the exact same time. That's what it is. And it's true by anything. Right down this... Oh, I don't want to say anything bad about Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so... Either way, but that's the idea behind it. That's Vayoridu. Going down, they literally brought it down from the high up land in Eretz Yisrael, they brought it down outside of Eretz Yisrael. Or number two, a Yerida, they climbed up trees and they brought it down as well. But the Mefarshim were actually discussing why they didn't learn that from anywhere else. But the Shach says the word indicates something so, so different. Vayoridu is, they had a Yerida. There was a true Yerida. B'nai, you should understand, I think most people feel this. I don't want to say everybody feels it. You go to Eretz Yisrael, you feel different. It feels different. You just feel like it's a different place. It feels like you're in a different level. When they left Eretz Yisrael, the Meraglim, they felt the Yerida. They felt like they fell. Like they actually fell down. They lowered themselves to a level that they were never on before. At one point, they were high up. They felt like they were kadosh. They felt like they had it. And even though they had ideas when they were in Eretz Yisrael, they felt like, we can still do this. We're strong enough to do it. They had the ability to. As soon as they left, they fell down and they said, we're never going to be able to do this ever again. It's like most people who, you spend a year or two in Eretz Yisrael. When you're in Eretz Yisrael, you feel that type of kedusha that you think is going to last you forever. You're going to be able to sit and learn forever. You're going to be able to sit and do what you need to do forever. You're never going to have a problem davening. You're not going to have a problem learning. Why would I ever have a problem? But as soon as you leave, that first day, the jet lag just comes in, it creeps in, and you say, like, you know what? I can't do this. I don't think I'm going to be able to do it. And maybe it's true in other places. I felt it leaving Eretz Yisrael. Not the literal, I get on the plane, we go outside the area, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, that's it. It's not like I'm flipping through the movie channel right when I get on the plane itself. But it's different. You go to Eretz Yisrael, you feel that feeling, and then it's gone. The Meraglim, one of the reasons why they did what they did is because when they left Eretz Yisrael, they felt that Yerida. It's by Yeridu Eleinu. They came down to us. There was a Yerida to Sheol Tachtis, says the Shach, to the lowest level of Gehenna, and they couldn't understand what had happened to them. The people bombarded and badgered the Meraglim with question after question, getting them to admit that the land had major issues, and that was part of the Yerida, that when you leave Eretz Yisrael, that happens. Kalev and Yoshua were able to bring a little bit of Eretz Yisrael with them. Maybe Yoshua because he had the Yud added to his name. Kalev because he bowed down and davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu by Maris Machpelah, by the Kever of the Avos. But the other Meraglim didn't. They just didn't have it. The fruit itself helped them have that Yerida. Though when they brought it outside, eating that fruit outside of Eretz Yisrael was also a bit of a Yerida for them, and they just couldn't feel it anymore. And it was bad. Vayoshivu osanu davor, says the Rabbeinu Ephraim, Vayoshivu osanu dever. They brought a plague to Klal Yisrael. Because what they did is they caused many, many people to die. No matter what their intentions were, and their intentions were noble. They might have had great intentions. They really might have said to themselves, let's stay with Moshe Rabbeinu, let's keep the Anani HaKavod, why shouldn't we have the month? Maybe they had positive intentions. But at the end of the day, when you don't do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, it's a Yerida and causes a dever. And in that sense, by Yichu B'yadim Mipri Aretz, they took from themselves, they took in their hands from the Pri of the land itself. By Yeridu Eleinu, and they had a Yerida. By Yeshiva son of Davar, and they had dever. They brought back to us a plague from Eretz Yisrael. By Yomru, and they said, Tov Aretz Asher Hashem Elokeinu Nosin Lanu. It's so much better for us to be, and this is not literally how you learn it, this is just the drush behind it, it's so much better to get to Eretz Yisrael and to have everything in Eretz Yisrael and not to have to leave it. Listen, we have our jobs and we know what we're supposed to do. Part of our tafkid, part of us, some of us, our tafkid is still to stay in Chutz La'aretz and to do what we need to do here. Not everybody has that. Those can go to Eretz Yisrael. It's amazing. But those that have their tafkid, those that have their tachlis, to be able to stay in Chutz La'aretz and do what they need to do here, you have your tafkid. Until Mashiach comes or until we're all told that it's time to go to Eretz Yisrael, okay, you do what you need to do. But Tova Aretz has to be in our mouths at all times. To say to ourselves, no matter what happens, we might have a Yerida, we might have a little bit of a dever, but we work on ourselves and we say, Tova Aretz Asher Hashem Elokeinu Nosin Lanu, our mindset has to be, we're always willing, we're always pushing to get ourselves back to the ultimate level of Eretz Yisrael. Have a good Shabbos, everybody.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.